This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than they're worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Thank you very much, Shah, for joining us today on the Be Your Own Show. Lovely to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. Glad to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Now, I wonder if many people would know what your name actually means.
Probably not.
No. Explain. All because right, it just sum you up.
Oh, thank you, darling. So most people think that it's short for Sharon or Charlotte. But actually, that is my full name. Shah is my full name. It's Navajo Indian. I was born in California. My mom was on an American Indian reservation with me while she was pregnant. And it means sunshine.
But you are like sunshine because your character, your personality and your aura is amazing.
Thank you.
And I follow you on Instagram, so I see a lot of it. And it's always like positive, motivational, lots of amazing things going on. Including the Christmas holiday that you had.
my Christmas was like batshit crazy for real. Yeah, it was.
Right, okay, let's get started then. So we've got lots of questions here. Great questions. I really want to dive in deep and figure out how you got to where you are now. And I think that's like a question like a lot of people want to know, because you see a lot of the time with these successful women in business, entrepreneurs, seven-figure business earners, it's like they started here, now they're here. Where? How did it happen? So if we take it all the way back, how did it all come about? Because now you built multiple seven-figure businesses and you sold them, you've exited. But in the very beginning, you started out normal job. How did it start? How's it happened?
I think for context, it's really important to just pick up on something that you've said, because I feel like there's not enough knowledge and information out there how you go from, it's not from A to B, it's how do you go from A to Z, right? So I think it's really important to understand that you don't just wake up in this position. You don't just wake up and everything's worked itself out. And it's not a linear journey. It's not like do this, do this, do this, do this, and then everything's going to work out. It is never like that. So for the people who are listening and watching, and maybe they're in a time of flux, and maybe they're feeling frustrated, and maybe they're thinking, I don't know if this is going to work, I would just really encourage you to know for sure that I have never in my life ever met a single entrepreneur who has had a journey that was completely easy, where everything worked. No one, like literally no one, no matter how successful they are, whether it's Richard Branson, James Dyson, I've worked with some incredible people. None of them had a journey that was completely linear and straightforward. So how did it start? Well, I think the interesting thing is I actually didn't ever have a regular job, right? So I knew really early on that I was unemployable, and I was unemployable in the sense that I'm quite opinionated. I feel like most things could be done better. Not necessarily that I can do most things better, but I feel like we should always be trying to figure out how do we improve things. And that's not really what companies want when they're looking for an employee or a regular employee, and particularly not when you're just starting out. Because when you're just starting out in your 20s, you're there to do a job that somebody's going to pay you for. So I got very lucky, and my first quote unquote job, which is why I say I've never really been employed, I started working with Chris Eubank Senior. That was literally my first job. And I started working with him, handling all of his press and his promotions. And then I started working more on the management side. And then I went and became the first and only licensed female boxing manager in the world at that time. So I had my British Boxing Board of Control license, and I got into boxing. And I say this with a background that I actually went to the London School of Economics and I studied economics. And most of my peer group left university and they went to work for JP Morgan or Citibank. I couldn't think of anything worse. I didn't want a regular job. I didn't want to work for someone else. I definitely didn't want to spend my life just chasing money for the sake of chasing money. I wanted to do something that was going to make me happy and make me money, because I think it's important to do both things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people actually, like you said, they, you know, your peers have gone off and they've done job. They're doing probably still in these roles right now, right? Working JP Morgan, McKinsey & Co, banks and stuff. And it probably doesn't actually fulfill them in any which way, you know? And I think personally, life is for living and it's about the now. And I think that, you know, we're a long time dead. So we have to do what makes us happy now. And we spend a lot of time, I think, naturally, shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know, and it's too late then. And also, like, opportunities are often missed because we spend a lot of time thinking, is that right? Should I do that? Weighing up the pros and the cons, you know, as opposed to having that gut feeling and just going for it if it feels right and it's the right time, you know.
And think about how much time you spend at work, how much of your life you spend working. So why would you want to spend that time doing something that you don't really enjoy or that doesn't light you up? I just, that doesn't make sense to me.
And it's a bit like relationships and friendships, you know. I look at even with my business, and a lot of people say a businesship is not a real word. But it is about what lights me up. You know, when I wake up in the morning, you know, every day is a different day. There's a new challenge. There's, you know, but it ultimately lights me up. It sets me alight. It makes me feel good, you know, especially when I talk to the women that we've got on board and the new partnerships that we have and new collaborations. And it just makes me feel whole. And I think, like I said, any friendship, relationship, businessship, it needs to bring out the best in you. You know, you need to be able to learn from it, to grow from it, not only professionally, but personally as well. That is what is really important.
Absolutely agree. Yeah.
So the famous question, I would say famous question, I'm sure you've been asked it a lot, but I really want to know, and I want to know, you know, I suppose a different answer, a different take, is how it felt when you interviewed Chris Eubanks Senior and how that opportunity came about. Because I've read what I think it is, but I'd love for you to tell me from your side what the actual truth of what happened.
So what happened was I'd won a competition to write for Cosmopolitan magazine whilst I was at uni. And I was in the editor's office, and I'd always been and still am a very big boxing fan. And I was in the editor's office and she had this stack of letterheaded paper on her desk, and it actually said from the editor's office on it. And I just thought to myself, do you know what? If I were to abscond with some of that letterheaded paper, I could write to Chris Eubank and I could potentially get an interview with him. And if I did that, she would think that was really impressive. And the magazine would publish the interview and that would start my career. So, okay, let's do that. So I basically stole letterheaded paper from the editor's office of Cosmopolitan, wrote to Chris Eubank's promoter, which was Matchroom at the time, Barry Hearn, his son Eddie Hearn's now taken over. And they basically agreed to the interview because they thought it was for Cosmopolitan magazine, right? Now, bearing in mind, Cosmopolitan magazine and the editor had no idea what I was doing. So the interview's all set up and I rock up to do the interview. And he's always late. Chris is just always late for everything, right? His timekeeping is just like on a different planet. So he was 2 hours late for me, which made him an hour late for another journalist who was the features editor at the Daily Mirror. So I said to him, look, it's fine. You can do hers first. I don't mind. And he said, okay, well, if you do that, then he had like the whole suite at the Grosvenor House Hotel. Like it wasn't like a bedroom. It's like a whole living room. And he said, come up with us. I'll order lunch. You can have lunch like in the living area whilst I do the interview. And she was so pissed. She was like, I've never had anyone sitting on my interviews. I'm not having anyone sitting on my interviews. And Chris was like, well, I'm 2 hours late for Char's interview. I'm 1 hour late for you. She said you can have the interview first. Like, you know, he's very moral and kind of straightforward. So he was like,
yeah,
I'm not going to do the interview then. Either you do the interview and Char can have lunch, or we don't do the interview. And to cut a long story short, what happened, it was a really bad interview. She got up about halfway through the interview and walked out. And like the next day, the front page of the Mirror was something like, an hour in Chris Eubank's company and even the Pope would want to smash his lights out. And it was like, wow. So Chris obviously realized there was a problem. So he said to me, thinking that I'm a bona fide journalist, so Char, tell me, like, what would you have done differently? How would you have handled that? And obviously I'm now on the spot and I'm just, the naivety of being like 21 is great, because I was just like, well, Chris, like, sounded like I really knew what I was talking about. Well, Chris, I don't know why you did the interview, because you have nothing to promote. You have nothing to sell. There's no benefit, no gain for you for doing that interview. And that is her style. It's a bit like Jeremy Clarkson, right? She is known for that style. Whereas obviously being interviewed for Cosmopolitan magazine, it's all nice and warm and fuzzy. You know that you're, but why would you do an interview with her if you've got no benefit to it? And yeah, her style is to try to catch people out all the time. And so he literally picked up the phone and started calling his promoter's office saying, who set this up? Why am I doing this? I don't have, and he was literally repeating what I was saying. I don't have anything to sell. I don't have anything to promote. Why are we doing this? And then he then hung up and then he said, do you want a job? And I think, okay. I literally had no idea what the job was. I mean, I was still at university and I just accepted a job. I didn't even think about it until I was on my way home. And I got into my, I was living in Finsbury Park at the time. And by the time I got home from the West End, he'd left a message on my answer machine. And it was hilarious, because I was living with my boyfriend at the time. And the message on the answer machine was in from Chris in his very distinctive voice, telling me that I had to be at Gatwick Airport the next morning and to take an overnight bag, because we'd be up there for 2 days. And my boyfriend is listening to this. He's like, what the hell? Like, what? Like, you're going away with Chris Eubank for 2 days? And I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. So the next morning, like, it all happened that quickly. The next morning, I'm at Gatwick Airport and we're flying to Manchester. And he says, okay, great. So you're now in charge of all the press and promotions for the biggest fight that will ever take place in this country. Nobody knows about it yet, but I'm fighting Nigel Benn for the second time at Old Trafford, at Manchester United's grounds. And you're going to handle all the press and publicity and promotions. And I'm like, okay. And I had...
This is madness.
I had no clue what I was doing. But I learned.
Yeah. But this, I feel like there's lessons in all of this. There's learnings in all of this for all of us to take away. And I think first and foremost, it's take the ball and run with it. Again, people sit there thinking, what do I do? What do I do? What do I not do? And it's just like, you've been given an opportunity. This opportunity ultimately changed your entire life. That's it. Figure it out on the way, right? You know, like, everybody makes mistakes, but you just got to go with it. And also, I think, you know, in the beginning, you think, you know, you took the lettered-headed paper and you just, like, no holds back. You was going for it. You made that, you know, you made that decision. And again, it ultimately changed everything. Look where you are now because of it. You know, you've got to be fearless. You've got to just go with it.
And I think you have to create your own opportunities. And massively. Okay, should I have stolen lesser-headed paper? Well, yeah, I think I should have done, because I'm not stealing money. Right? I'm not stealing money. I'm not stealing the letterheaded paper trying to get a loan. I'm not stealing the letterheaded paper.
There's no malice in it.
No,
there's no malice in it.
I genuinely believed that I could get an interview, and if I got an interview, that the editor would think this was great, and if that's it. I was thinking about my writing career. I wasn't thinking about creating a new career. And what was the most wonderful thing, because I am all about supporting other women, because I agree with Madeleine Albright, there is a special place in hell for women who don't support other women. And I think it's really sad that more and more I see women feeling like other women are a competition instead of collaboration. And this woman, she set the tone for me and how I work with other women. So she was this formidable editor. Imagine, I've gone into her office, I've stolen letterhead of paper from her office. She could be so pissed with me. So I rocked up and I told her what happened. I admitted the whole thing, and she was just like, "Char, like, you're really smart. I don't get it. Why would you think anyone reading Cosmo would want to read about boxing?" She's like, "You're literally the only female reader who wants to read about boxing. Like, what made you think that you..." And I was like, "Oh, I guess I didn't really think. I thought everybody was like me, right?" And so she did have a point. It's not necessarily mainstream. But here's what she did next. And this is where I think it just set for me the tone of how we should treat each other.
Yeah.
She said, "Obviously, you shouldn't have taken the letter to paper. But if you had the opportunity to do it again, you should do it again." She said, "I just have nothing but respect for you for just creating opportunities out of thin air." She said, "But I can't print. The interview, but I have an idea." She picked up the phone and she called her friend at News of the World, which was a tabloid paper at the time, right? And they paid the most money. And they said that she said to them, "Oh, I know you've been trying to get an interview with Chris Eubank and you haven't been able to get one. I've just got one, but I don't think we can use it. So I'm going to send it over to you. It's really good. And if you like it, I'll sell it to you." And then I could hear them. They must have asked her how much. So this is what she did. She, because this is like from a proper landline phone. She literally put them on hold and she said, "Shaw, how much is your student loan?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "How much is your university student loan?" And I said, "About 13,000. So she said, "Okay. Yeah, that'll be 15,000. She paid off my student loan for me. We sold it to well and paid off my student loan.
That is amazing. That is a formidable powerhouse woman. And as you said, quite rightly so, setting the tone. Like with what we do at Be Your Own, especially our membership club, I have no place, there is no place for any woman who has that scarcity mentality that they think that by giving to someone else takes away from themselves. We all need to be, you know, on the same, riding the same wave together, you know? And I think life, you know, it's tough for a woman sometimes. It's getting better now, I think. You know, more opportunities are coming about. But I think that we should be championing each other more, supporting, uplifting, and just, as you say, creating more opportunities for other women, like-minded women who just need probably just, I don't know, a little bit of help somewhere. And also, as you mentioned about creating your own opportunities, there are a few women that I have spoken to, and it disappoints me because they're always waiting for that right moment. You know, it's just like, I'm not on about sitting there, you know, waiting to be asked to sit at that same table and pulling up my own chair. Do you know what? I'll go and have my own table. I'll have my own table with my own chairs and I invite my own guests. I don't need to be at your table. You know, I love it.
You can't wait for things to happen. You have to go out there and create. But I do believe that for those of us who are able to do that, we have a responsibility to open as many doors for other women as possible. And even though I do agree that things, I'll be honest, I have never found it difficult. So I feel like sometimes I do like the sisterhood a disservice because I don't have a story to tell about how I've been held back. I just don't. I've had my whole career, right? But that's not that I don't make it happen, and it's not that I haven't seen it with my friends. Of course I have. Yeah. But here's the thing, even though there is more parity now on pay, it's still not equal. In 2023, it's still not equal. But the really big gap is when women want to scale big businesses. It's okay for women, and I'm not dismissing women who want to have a lifestyle business. I'm all about choice and sovereignty over your body, your life, your decisions. However, for the women who want to grow, scale, and exit a company, it hasn't really changed. Less than 2% of all funding goes to women when it comes to VCs and proper serious money. Mm. How is that ethical? How is it possible? How is it good for the economy? Mm. How is it still happening in 2023? So I just want to encourage the women who are out there listening to this, who want to grow a bigger business, who want to scale to seven figures, maybe eight, maybe nine even, who want to maybe build a business that they can exit. And by the way, building a business that you can exit doesn't have to mean that you take on VC money or private equity or you float for a billion. It might mean that you build a company up that maybe it's doing $500,000 a year and maybe you sell it to one of your competitors for $2 million and they for your client. You do a trade sale, businesses are bought and sold all the time. However, the vast majority of businesses that are bought and sold, bought by men, sold by men, and women stay small. And that's the bit that frustrates me. If you are deliberately and intentionally keeping your business at a certain size because that is what you want, I'm 100% all for that. I am not for the women who want to expand and grow but don't have the support or the facilities or the finance to make it happen.
I love that. You're absolutely right. I mean, I actually sat in as a guest speaker on a panel for movingahead.org, and was looking at the Rosé report and some studies that have been done by Barclays. And we all know that if more money was invested in female-led and backed businesses, it would boost the economy massively. We all know that. And it's still, as you say, it's 2023. I did this in 2020. It was during COVID, the pandemic, and still in this few years, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed at all. But I think it is all about creating your own opportunities. And rightfully so, if you've created this lifestyle business, this business that's, you know, you've got this personal touch and you want to keep it small because you don't want to expand. Maybe you've had children. Maybe you're just happy as you are, because some people are just like that, you know, family run business. That's cool. But then there are the women out there that want to grow. They want to scale. They want to expand. They want to, I don't know, whether it's import, export, internationally, whatever, you know, must be more that's done for that. You know, I mean, I know ultimately, I know where my vision is. I know what I want to do with Be Your Own. And that's when you have business plans and strategies and all of that lot. But I think it is also down to women as well to want to know where do you want to go? What's the vision? You know, and you look at the end goal, if there is an end goal, and look at the steps backwards. What do I need to take to get to that said destination?
You reverse engineer the success. And one of the things that's so important for women is if you are in the category where you want to grow and scale a business, it's you need to find a place to normalize your ambitions. So I run a mastermind called The Cartel because I thought, well, actually, it's about time we actually started owning things and running things rather than being told what we're going to do. And this mastermind is very different because it's only for women who are already doing multiple six or seven figures and they want to grow to either seven figures or they want to have an exit. So it's a different type of mentality for the women who are in this mastermind, and they come from all different businesses. So it's not just, you know, a particular sector. It's not just, you know, it's not just an online industry. Of course, we've got a couple of great business coaches, but we've got a property developer. We've got somebody who has her own range of online physical products in Europics. I mean, it's just a real vast range. But all the women have one thing in common, and that is that they want and needed a place to normalize their ambitions. They needed to be around other women where they could talk about these things, where they could say, okay, I'm having challenges with my team, or my profit's fallen this month, and we need to just look at it and revisit it. Or actually, I want to import, I want to export. Does anybody? You have to make sure that if you are that type of woman who is ready to grow, scale, and potentially exit her business, that you find support, that you find places to normalize your ambition, to have conversations with like-minded people, because you'll then start to see that you're not alone. It's not easy, but you're not alone.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons why we actually created the membership club of Be Your Own is about that. It's creating this inner circle where women can feel a little bit more vulnerable, because everybody's operating at such high levels. They're all high achieving women. You know, as you said, if you've got problems in HR, you're having a dispute in finance, you want to go in for more funding, series A, B, C, whatever it is, like, this is a safe space to do so. And we've got women that are, you know, as I said, some are solopreneurs that are 6-7 figure business earners. And then we've got SMEs, you know, we've got women that are actually at IPO.
The women in your membership can also help each other, because
that's what it's all about.
You have like creating who are a couple of years ahead of other women in your membership, right? But the women who are ahead in terms of maybe business growth, they may have a HR challenge. So the women who are 2 years behind might be a former HR director and can step in and help them. Because just because where you are on that journey doesn't mean that you have all the answers, right? And this is why it's so important to do the type of things that you're doing.
Massively. And I feel like there's no hierarchy, because as you've just said there's some things that even at SME level, you might learn from someone who's, I don't say startup, but they're probably a little bit younger, you know. And they, for me, it's about taking a mix of women in marketing, women in HR, women in finance, women in different industry fields that can all collectively support each other in whatever area, as I say, professionally and personally as well. I'd definitely love to have a chat with you afterwards about what you're doing with your mastermind, because it sounds awesome. Talking of mentorship and mastermind, now, you have been previously mentored by Sir Richard Branson, which must have been amazing. That experience, what did you take away from it? Are you still like applying any of what you've learned to your everyday now?
Yeah, I think I've been really fortunate to have been mentored by some amazing people. I've been to, you know, I think we spent about a week on Necker Island, and that wasn't one of those, I'm not dissing people who choose to do this, but this wasn't a paid trip, right? I didn't pay to go to Necker to have my photo taken on Necker Island. It was part of a bigger project for Virgin Unite, which is his charity, which they were working on an entrepreneurship program. And I think for me, and I met Richard, interestingly, right at the very beginning of my career. I have a plaque on my wall from Richard right now, from like way back when I started my first company, asked me if I ever wanted to change my mind, he wanted to offer me any opportunity at Virgin that I wanted. And I keep that there because I think, you know what, when you're thinking about, as you get older and you get more into your career, I think you start to second guess yourself more. I think you start to think, oh, can I recreate all those opportunities that I had at the beginning? And the answer is you absolutely can, but you have to believe it, right? So I look at that and I think, hold up a second. How many people in this country have a letter from Richard Branson on their wall that says, you know, dear Shah, I should get it down. I'm going to read it to you. Here you go, look. So you can see this from Virgin Management, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Dear Shah, it was lovely hearing from you again. If you ever want a change of career, do let me know what area you're interested in. I would love to get you involved anywhere at Virgin. Just pop me a note. Best of luck. Love, Richard. I mean, how many people have that? Right?
Only you.
Probably other people, but not many. And the reason I keep this there is because I think if you could do that, then you can do this, whatever this is right now.
Yeah, that's a daily reminder. And I think, yeah, absolutely. When you get older, I mean, of course, we're all still fearless. We take opportunities. We're still, you know, probably really ambitious, but I think we do start to second guess our abilities and where we see the future of things. And I feel, especially if you've taken time out to have children, or you've had like other personal situations, like getting back into it, it can be a little bit tough. And I feel for the women that are in corporate, where they've had amazing careers in law, in HR and finance. They've taken time out to have their children, and it's like they often get disregarded when they want to go back into a firm, because it's like, well, actually, policies, regulations, legislations, lots of things change, and they're not offered the same role.
I think that's even more reason why women should be thinking about running their own businesses.
Yeah, because then you're creating your own, you know, you're creating your own, say, legacy, but how you want it, you know. You don't have to, I don't say you don't have to answer to anyone, and I don't say you have any less, you don't have any more freedom, or, you know, you probably are actually, you probably got less freedom. Really, but
I think you have more freedom, but I think the misnomer is that it's not that you work less, right? But you get to choose the hours that you work. So I think you do have more freedom because you have more freedom of choice, and you have more freedom where you work, when you work. But you still have to do the work, right? But I think that the one thing that working for yourself does is it puts you in control rather than someone else controlling you.
And also, you've got no one else to answer to. That's the whole idea. I mean, for me, that's one of the reasons why I was totally the same as you, absolutely unemployable. I mean, I worked at McDonald's for one season when I was 16.
I worked there at 16. How weird is that?
Because you did one season.
I was 18. And I was a bloody vegetarian. I still am. I was a vegetarian working at McDonald's. I mean, that tells you. I don't have any airs or graces, right? I'll do whatever I have to do.
Exactly. So, that's what you do, though. And I actually feel sometimes when I look at the pay packet then, I think it was paid every 2 weeks when I was there. Yeah, and it's just, I felt like, oh my goodness, when I had that money, I was like, oh, I've worked hard for this. I would do the morning shift. But again, what I took away from that experience was actually, it's not where I really want to be. You know, I'm not designed. I'm not a person that can stick by the rules and also be someone else's cog in a machine. You know, I've got my own thoughts. I've got my own, I know what I want to do. And I think for some people, it doesn't work to be employed by someone else. You and I are the same. Okay, so let's talk about your book. I want to talk about the writing process, how you got started, how the thoughts, how long it took, stop talking, start doing.
I have it right here. So this book.
I'm very sorry, I haven't, but I would love to have a read of it.
All right, so this book literally changed my career again, because it opened up so many doors for me. So I've been very fortunate. I've been published by traditional publishers. I've sold over 250,000 books, a lot of books. I've been published by Wiley and by Penguin Random House. And this book has literally just come out. It is the 10th anniversary edition of Stop Talking, Start Doing. And what's really interesting is it went straight in at number one at WH Smith's, which I think tells you something. It's 60% new content from the original book, but I think what it tells you is that the challenge of procrastination is just as prevalent and relevant today as it was 10 years ago. And it'll probably be just the same in 20, 30 or 50 years time, right? So many of us have things that we want to do, but we talk about them instead of doing them. And so this book addresses it, but it's written in a really easy to read format, right? So there's got great imagery in it. It's, here's a good one. Here's what you should do with all your excuses is just flush them down the toilet, just get rid of them. It's, you know, making sure, are you actually leaning your ambitions up the right wall, or are you like putting all this time and effort into something that you don't actually really want to do? And I think what people really resonated with this book was that it's really what I would call inhalable content. It's easy to digest. You can pick this up on a 2-3 hour train or plane journey and have finished it by the end of it. You can dip in, you can dip out. And for me, I would recommend anyone who is running their own business, solo entrepreneur to SME, writing a book is a game changer for you, but it's also a game changer for your business. And the key reason is it literally automatically puts you as the expert in that field. So straight away, you get seen as the expert in your space. And that's definitely what it did for me. And in terms of the how long it takes to write, well, I think that book took me about a year. If I was to do it today, with all the new AI tools around, I would never get AI to write a book, but I would definitely use it to help me with prompts, with research. I'd use it to help me with structure and maybe some ideas for things just to help me think differently. I'd get it to check stuff. I could write a book and I could teach anyone how to write a book in 90 days. I don't think it would take anyone longer than 90 days to write a book now. I really don't. I just think it's a game changer. And for me, The writing process is the hardest part. Two things. The hardest part is the very beginning when you're staring at a blank screen or a blank piece of paper. And so I swear by it. I literally live my life on post-it notes, right? So I literally live my life. I plan out everything on post-it notes. That's the first thing. And the second hardest part of a book is a bit like, have you ever done up a property? Have you ever done any renovations?
No. Well, not me personally, no.
All right. So anyone who's listened to this, ever been like doing a renovation work on a property, the hardest part of a book is the snagging process. So when you renovate a property, it all looks great until the last 10%. And the last 10% is the snagging process where you go around and you realize, oh, actually, that's out. Oh, actually, that's the wrong door handle. Oh, actually, no, you put it on the other way. Oh, actually. So from the outside, it looks like it's finished. But the snagging, that 10%, takes an inordinate amount of time. And the same is true with the book. So it's the editing at the end that takes more time. If you can have a good structure, and you can use AI now to help you do that. Yeah. The writing process is genuinely relatively simple for people who run their own businesses. And the reason is because we are passionate about what we talk about, how we help our clients. You are literally taking the work that you do on a daily basis and putting it into a book format. You're not having to create a Harry Potter story. You're not having to create all these fantasies. You're actually putting into a book what you do on a daily basis. That's why it's easy.
I mean, I started writing my book, I was probably a little bit too young. I was 24-ish, and that was my first business, which was a retail startup. But it was actually taking all the things that I'd learned in terms of funding, in terms of all the mistakes that I'd made, and why I created Be Your Own off the back of it, which is more community-driven. Obviously, that was product-driven. This is more service-driven. And I kind of like kept putting it down, and I never really picked it up again until last year when I was approached by someone else to look at putting a book together. And it's definitely, as you said, I think it's a great branding tool. And all it is taking what you've already got stored up here and actually putting it onto, well, in a book. And I think, you know, you're creating something that other people can read and learn from. It's amazing.
And it makes you really accessible to everybody because everybody can invest in a book. And if they can't invest into a book, the truth is they're never going to be successful. So I just think it's a really good way to appeal to everybody, to people who, you know, and it's just an easy thing for people to get to know you. So anytime you want to have a chat about books, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Final question, because you've been awarded the highest honour from the Queen herself. And you've been listed, honoured as, is it 20 most influential women in business by Sunday Times? Am I correct in saying?
The Sunday Times listed me as one of their top 20 most influential entrepreneurs in the UK.
Amazing, amazing. Congratulations. Now, where else is left? Because they are very big accolades. Congratulations, absolutely incredible. Where else is left for you to go? What else to do?
Everywhere. I don't take those things seriously. I'm proud of my MBE. I'm proud of the accolades. I'm proud of the number of books we sold. But really, at the end of the day, we still go to bed at night and wake up in the morning just as a regular human being. So for me, it's always a journey. What's the next thing that I want to create? What's the next thing that I want to do? Where's the next place that I want to go? For me, it's just creating a bigger and bigger impact. And really enjoying the journey, really understanding that I'm very fortunate that money is no longer my primary driver, but that doesn't mean I don't want to make money or that I'm not ambitious, of course, wildly so. However, what I've realized that if I'm not fulfilled in the process of doing that, the money was never worth it.
Love that. It shouldn't be the only sole reason why you do something. You know, you've got to love what you do.
Anna, the reason I say this is because I absolutely believe you can make money doing anything. I believe you can make the same amount of money doing anything. So I would highly recommend people find out what they really love, what's going to light them up every morning, what they're passionate about, but what they really is going to make them feel fulfilled. And then let's figure out how you make money from that rather than thinking, okay, I've got to do that because that makes the money. No, you don't have to do that because that makes the money. You can do whatever it is you want to do. You just have to figure out how to make that make you the money.
Absolutely. And also, I feel like you have to be slightly gifted and talented to do that, because it's no good flogging a dead horse. You know, if you're not good at it, but you love doing it, I'm not really sure. But yeah, absolutely. To stop spending time doing something that you don't like doing.
100%. And everyone can find that thing that they are really good at. It might not be the first thing. It might not be your third thing. But the key thing is, you know, there's a boxing analogy. It's not how you get knocked down that counts. It's how you get back up. And I wholeheartedly believe that.
Yeah. Love it. Shah, it's been absolutely amazing having you today. Thank you so much. So many words of wisdom and pearls and love it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, darling. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.